From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Well, spring has sprung, hasn't it? Later on tonight, ghost crimes. Here's what's happening. More tension in Austin, Texas. At least one man injured tonight after coming into contact with a package containing a device at a Goodwill store in Austin, Texas. But police and the FBI said it was not believed to be linked to the string of package bombs that have killed two people over the past month. The victim was a Goodwill employee who was being treated for non-life-threatening injuries. He apparently was talking to someone about safety when the suspicious item was found there. Police believe it had to do with some kind of military contraption. Tuesday night's explosion unfolded on Brody Lane in the southwestern Austin area. At least five other explosions, though, have rocked the Austin and San Antonio areas. Earlier Tuesday, a package exploded on a conveyor belt at a FedEx shipping center northeast of San Antonio, injuring a worker. Also on Tuesday, the FBI said that the suspicious package reported at the FedEx distribution center near Austin contained an explosive device as well. Kenny Rahmeyer, of course, is with our affiliate KLBJ in Austin, Texas, and is their reporter there. Kenny, how tense is it in Austin, Texas right now?
You know, George, I would have to say it's nervous. And we're on edge at this point. You know, Austin over the years, George, been a safe city, Texas State Capitol, big college town, University of Texas, high-tech city. We just had a successful South by Southwest. You know, so this city is just not accustomed or not familiar with dealing with this kind of situation. It's been a safe city over the years. But I would say over these last couple of days, and certainly the last 24 hours, George, the city is a little more apprehensive, a little more on edge. I think that's fair to say.
Kenny, have FBI profilers come up with any kind of rationale at all about this?
In short, no. That's on Sunday, the police chief here reached out to the bomber or bombers, said we'd like to have some dialogue, get in touch with us. They really have nothing on the motive or anything like that at this point, George.
All right. You keep in touch with us, Kenny, and let us know if anything breaks on this just unbelievably horrible story. Dr. John Curtis, of course, back with us. John, of course, was just on Two Goes In, One Comes Out against Howard Bloom, and won overwhelmingly with your approval and votes. And I thought we'd bring him in to talk about this story. John, let me ask you this. This situation in Austin, Texas, somewhat similar to Ted Kaczynski, who kept his bombing going, the Unabomber, for 17 years before he got caught, only because his brother turned him in.
Well, that's right. And, you know, of course, the FBI at the time of the Kaczynski uncovering, you know, the Ted Kaczynski finally tracking him down in, you know, in the woods and in this kind of self-made cabin, you know, it was his brother that had read a manuscript of his and realized that that was his brother's writing and then turned him in. This is going on for, you know, about how many days now, since March 2nd?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a terrifying situation for anybody in that Austin city limits right now, or San Antonio for that matter. And it just really shows you what lack security there is in the package delivery system that we have in this country, that literally anything can be sent through the mail, and now we're seeing explosives being sent. And this guy's sophisticated because he used a tripwire, which is essentially something that you would do with an improvised explosive device. And I think that's an indication that this guy might be military and have a somebody who's both defused bombs, perhaps, in the past, and now because, you know, he's disturbed, I think, you know, you ask what the motives could be. Well, you know, what were the motives with Ted Kaczynski, other than he was psychotic, a recluse, and wanting to create havoc with people? And I think that in the final analysis, when they figure out who this person is, and they'll find him, because sending a package through FedEx where it exploded in the middle of the night, there's information that's given and a way for the FBI and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms to be able to trace this person. So, police right now are playing this close to the vest and not giving away any clues. But I think that they're closing in on this guy, and I think what we have to find right now, George, is that the security situation across the country. We are a vulnerable society.
Sure.
We've seen it with guns, and now we're seeing it with bombs sent through the mail. And I think that they're going to have to tighten up a little bit on this.
John, I don't think we can rule out terrorism, even though, like you, I believe it's probably the work of a single individual. But I don't think you can rule out terrorism yet, can you?
Well, no, not really, because that package that went through the FedEx facility had the earmarks of terrorism, because a lot of those self-made terrorist bombs include shrapnel and oftentimes screws and washers and debris that just sprays in all directions. And that bomb had that. So we don't know that yet, but that has not been ruled out by any stretch. But this does bear the marks of one of these diabolical madmen that are out there, beyond the pale and creating this kind of havoc.
Now, what about social media? I wonder if anybody has said anything on social media about things like this that they might be able to track and trace. Or, as you well know, John, there were hardly any secrets. Again, Kaczynski was turned in by his brother, who figured it out. Somebody's got to know something, don't you think?
Well, you would think that they would be posting on some kind of social media, and I'm sure they're scouring that right now to figure out, who would potentially do this. Just like with the shooter at that Parkland school down in Florida, there were plenty of clues, not only just to the FBI, but to many people as well who went to school with him and who knew his postings on the internet, that he was a time bomb, ready to go off, and nobody really took him that seriously. I'm sure that, a little bit more analysis of social media and we'll find somebody threatening to blow up the world or something and maybe lead to, this bomber.
It might. John, thank you so much. A gunman who shot and wounded two students at the Great Mills High School in Maryland was killed after engaging an armed school resource officer. The shooter was the only fatality. A female student, though, critically injured, and a male student also shot but in stable condition at a hospital. The Federal Trade Commission is investigating whether the use of personal data from 50 million Facebook users by a company violated a consent decree by the tech company signed with the agency in 2011. The probe follows a weekend of turmoil for the social media giant. Reports this weekend said the research firm improperly gained access to the data of more than 50 million Facebook users. Lauren Weinstein, our expert on the internet, with us. How much trouble is Facebook in on this one, Lauren?
This is just a total, complete mess. Facebook stock is tanking. CEO Mark Zuckerberg hasn't been seen or heard from. We're hearing now that the Facebook security chief, who had been expressing concerns about this earlier, has been reassigned, and he may be leaving shortly. Let me try to put this in a nutshell, because it's kind of complicated. There was a professor at Cambridge who ran a survey on Facebook and got about 270,000 Facebook users to take this personality survey. He said he was doing it for academic research. Because of the rules that Facebook had in place at that time, that allowed him to get the profiles of those people's friends. That leveraged him up to about 50 million Facebook users. He then sold that data to Cambridge Analytica. Cambridge Analytica had major persons in it that we've all heard of, like Steve Bannon and Robert Mercer.
Mm-hmm.
They used that data for political purposes. Now, there's violations all down the line, because this data was taken originally under the pretense of academic use and then used for political. Then Cambridge Analytica apparently told Facebook that they had deleted the data, but they really hadn't deleted it. Meanwhile, we now see undercover videos that were made of Cambridge Analytica top executives, and their CEO, by the way, was suspended by the company just today. talking about dirty tricks and sexual honeypots, claiming that they're responsible for getting Donald Trump into office. And there's no proof at this point that the Trump campaign actually used any of this Facebook data. But Facebook knew about this some time back and didn't inform users. So there's blame all around. Facebook for letting this data go out in the first place, Cambridge Analytica for misusing it. It's just a terrible thing, and frankly, you know how I've felt about Facebook for a long, time.
I
really am not happy about their whole business model because I think it's very, very manipulative of users. That's why I'm not on Facebook. And this is a real terrible crisis for the company. Now of course, Cambridge Analytica is in a lot of trouble now, too. Both of these companies are being looked at by regulators on both sides of the ocean. At the UK, the Facebook wanted to do an audit, and then they got the regulators in the UK said you can't do an audit at Cambridge Analytica because the government's going to be doing it. And Facebook really doesn't know how to respond. My advice has been kind of what it's been all along. I don't think you should be on Facebook. I understand a lot of people feel that they have to be because their friends are and their families are. We just see over and over and over again these kinds of flagrant privacy violations. And at some point, you've got to say enough is enough. So that's where I stand on it. And nobody knows where this is going to come out now because Facebook just doesn't know what to do.
All right. Thanks, Lauren. Of course, Facebook stock taking it right on the chin because of all of this. Doctors have taken a major step towards curing the most common form of blindness, age-related macular degeneration. 86-year-old man Douglas Waters could not see out of his right eye at all. Now he says, I can now read the newspaper. He's one of two patients given pioneering stem cell therapy at the Moorfields Eye Hospital in London. Cells from a human embryo were grown into a patch that was delicately inserted into the back of his eye. In a moment, world events. How do they affect all of us? Craig Hewlett joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, over the past several months, I've gotten well over 500 emails from you asking for Craig Hewlett to come back on the program, and I can think of no better and appropriate time than to get Craig back on. Craig has been a speechwriter, assistant for special projects to a congressman, has been a consultant to federal law enforcement, of course, and a regular contributor here on Coast to Coast. His well-read book is called The Hydra of Carnage, and here's Craig back on Coast to Coast. Welcome back, my friend.
Hi, thank you.
I want to get your reaction, if I can, Craig, to this bombing episode that has been going on in Austin, Texas, and San Antonio, Texas. What's your gut telling you on this?
Well, if you recall, way back when the militia first started up, there was a great deal of skepticism on people's part, especially at ATF&E. I met with one of their intel guys early on. And I tried to point out that the leaders of certain militia groups were also leaders of every other foul possibility you could bring to mind. And one of the things that I discovered early on, and I did talk to ATF intelligence about it, is there's a thing in ATF literature is a master blaster. These are people that are well trained in using explosives. You don't have to be military trained. In fact, the military uses master blasters to be instructors at places like White Sands and Aberdeen Proving Ground. So, you know, it doesn't take a real genius to make these kinds of things, these kinds of bombs. And I think it was inevitable. It was inevitable with the militia that they would start using them. And most of the Americans don't know this, but during that whole period of Tim McVeigh and the militia movement, there were over 600 pipe bombs that did, in fact, explode. There were over 20 train derailments caused by the same methods, and all of this would have been put in a different, you know, a lot of people use the word terrorism because they think they understand it better, and that's exactly not true. Very little of it is what would be classical terrorism. This is more like an organized guerrilla movement of people that are dissatisfied, not just with the United States as a leader of this imperial regime that people are affected all over the world, but other countries as well, and they do meet and they do share information. Tim McVeigh went to Germany. He went to Michigan. People up in Michigan used him as a bodyguard. It was a constant rotation of people like this that are unhappy, and they always make connections with other people of like mind. All I could do is I could tell you what I told the ATF long before Tim McVeigh or anybody even heard the name militia. I told him then this will escalate. There's nothing anybody can do about it. It's going to escalate. And it'll take qualified law enforcement to bring it down.
Yep, absolutely. Then why go after innocent people at randomly, it appears, who have nothing to do with any of this?
Well, it's not so much the people. The people part of it, you know, classical terrorism will kill absolutely anybody by indiscriminate means,
right,
to make you suffer the way they feel their people, their families have suffered in their countries. And it's impossible to argue that that's not a valid argument. Of course it's a valid argument. We kill hundreds of thousands of children and women in foreign countries, 130 different countries, and what, we expect no retaliation here on our soil? No, there'll be another 9/11. There will be an increase in both classical terrorism, but as I pointed out, and I know for a fact I'm the only one that has ever pointed this out, in the Hydra of Carnage, the international guerrilla movement of these kinds of people had already begun 30 years ago, but nobody wanted to address it as a guerrilla movement that was orchestrated, organized, thought out, met, conference calls. And my God, the whole world is now full of the communication devices to speak to anybody in real time.
Yeah, exactly. So you do not believe this is the work of just a lone person, that there might be some organization behind it?
There's always something more behind it. You know, very rarely, you know, we're the only country in the world that treats every act like this as a lone gunman or a lone nut theory, because America and our government, working with the mainstream media, they don't ever want the American people to think that the government, the mainstream media, would be anything but absolutely honest with all of us all the time. And that's because we've got a silly government in power right now, almost Monty Python-like, that they have to treat the American people like children. So that a bad man did it, so let's lock him up, let's shoot him. There, everything's good. And then 3 weeks later, it happens again.
Ted Kaczynski had his scheme going for 17 years, Craig, before he got caught, and he only got caught because his brother turned him in.
That's true. And if you read his manifesto, it wasn't a bunch of gibberish. The man was very well-read.
He was at Harvard at the age of 16.
Yes, and he knew what the complaints were on a global scale. Now, that doesn't justify what he's doing. What I am saying is the American people need to grow up and face the fact that our government is as responsible for these acts as the people who act. And nobody wants to do that. That's why I refuse to call every act terrorism rather than calling it what it really is. If it's a guerrilla war, if you're fighting, that means Castro and Che Guevara fighting against the regime in Cuba, okay? They had a legitimate grievance. They wanted regime change. The people were behind them. And in the end, the guerrillas won. We don't want to discuss that at any level in the United States until our government itself is prepared to do regime change here in America like we do all over the world.
Why Austin, Texas? Why San Antonio? Why that region?
I think Texas is, you know, I had a corporation. I was actually raised in Texas. When we moved from Michigan, I grew up in Texas high schools. And I also did business there for 7 years during the, you know, the oil and housing boom. I know Texas pretty well. And I got to know a lot of the people on the street as well as businessmen and law enforcement. But I will say this. Texas is absolutely the most unique place you would ever want to live. But I wouldn't recommend it if you want to be lighthearted and happy all the time. It's a terrible place to live because they take their individualism dead serious. So it doesn't surprise me that Texas would be a starting point for some groups. My God, before Johnny Carson ever heard of the idea of anger, road rage, It was happening every single month in Houston when I was down there in the early 80s.
How?
They drive around with a 44 Magnum and they shoot at each other.
Jeez.
Because they flip each other off on the freeway.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, don't expect things to change anytime soon. But that isn't really what we're faced with. The attrition that's forcing these people to believe they have no other choice is going to continue and it's going to get worse. The attrition against our own country's people.
Craig, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back for more as we talk about world events. There's lots more. We're going to talk about guns, gun control. We're going to talk about North Korea. And next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Craig Hewlett on Coast to Coast AM. Our special guest, Craig Hewlett. We're talking about world events with Craig. We'll take your phone calls next hour. Boy, did we have a spurt of ticket sales over the week in Scottsdale, Arizona. We've got a month to go now, a month to go for the event, almost to the day. So take advantage of it. Go get your tickets. It's our live stage show. We're going to have a great time. It's in the Virginia Piper Theater. Full information at coasttocoastam.com. Click events at the top of the homepage, and it opens up for you, and there you go. You can get your tickets that way. And also June 9th in Las Vegas, Nevada, our next live stage show. We'll be announcing a few more later on in the next month or so. But take advantage. Scottsdale, Arizona, April 21st, Las Vegas, Nevada, June 9th. And welcome back to Coast, Craig Hewlett with us. So many issues to talk with you about, Craig. I want to get your take on the upcoming tentative May meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un from North Korea. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's probably a good idea, and that may be why they're going ahead with it. It's they're trying very hard to bring Trump into the fold and to act presidential. They have done so without any success at this point. He's caused more havoc than anything else. But the truth is, we're going to have to deal with China on the Korean issue. And anybody that's been around Washington very long knows this. Whether Trump will go along with it or can he act presidential, even if it's fake, I don't know. Trump is a real problematic in our nation right now. And in many ways, I guess it's our own fault. I have to start being honest here. Something just took place recently that I don't think most people have heard about, but Monmouth University Polling Institute just did a study, and it found that no less than 74% of Americans believe in a deep state when it is described as a collection of unelected officials running policy. 74%.
That's huge.
Now, unfortunately, what they couldn't do in this survey, unless they were making an attempt to do it, is that they find you would find that 74% is probably evenly divided by Democrats that believe it's Republican people and Republicans that believe it's Democratic people. That's what that really is saying. It's not that they're saying 74% of the American people believe in a deep state because they have an academic or history background and they've read 1,000 books on the subject. Okay? So they're getting their take on the deep state from crackpots on the far left and crackpots on the far right, because the deep state is neither left nor right. It exists. Of course it exists. And, yes, it's unelected officials that do a great deal of running the show behind the scenes. That isn't a conspiracy theory. That's the way this government's been running since the end of World War II. But unfortunately, that 74% make up the 50% equation on both sides that they think their enemy is the deep state. And that's why we get nowhere, and why Carol Quigley once wrote, and let me do it specifically what he said. The chief problem of American political life for a long time has been how to make the two congressional parties more national and international. The argument that the two parties should represent opposed ideals and policies, perhaps on the right and some on the left, is a foolish idea, acceptable only to the doctrinaire and academic thinkers. In fact, the two parties should be almost identical so that the American people can throw the rascals out at any election without leading to any profound change in policy at the government level.
That's pretty dramatic stuff, Craig.
That's what we're living with, but I can't get anyone to read Carol Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, because it's 1,248 pages.
No, that's not going to happen. Of course
not. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, we can look at it the way we want to and go along, and the muddy waters will eventually drown all of us if we keep going the way we're going. But the American people really aren't ready to govern as sovereign citizens. And that question of sovereignty is at the very root cause of everything of importance that's wrong in our country. It's why we've got the Constitution is in tatters. I've had people call up and ask me to say, name one area of the Constitution that we don't have our rights in any longer. And I just start laughing and saying, God, please go read the damn thing. The Constitution does not even exist as it was intended today.
It's been years since it
no longer. It's gone on over 100 years.
Yeah.
Why we knew it would happen 200 years ago. 150 years ago, I think there were people that saw it coming. And by the turn of that century, I think there was enough talk out there by people like Einstein. He did radio interviews and a lot. And I think we began to be aware that the government is doing things that we don't want it to do, but we don't know how to fix it. We don't know what to do. And now it's gone so far that since World War II, every election has been the lowest turnout in our country's history. The election before this last one was the lowest turnout since women got the right to vote. Suddenly, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton come on the scene, two of the most vilified and hated crooks to ever be in the public limelight ever in our country's history. Both of these people are more criminal than Al Capone.
No, come on.
But instead, what do? We get the largest turnout in the last 50 years of any election because the people that elected Hillary hate Trump. The people that voted for Trump hate Hillary. So it was a hate-based narrative. But we're still not ready to admit that. Today, Americans don't want to admit that they hate the liberal left Democrats, period. And them on the left, who always claim to be Greenpeace and peaceful and for peace and, you know, all of that. The truth is, no, they hate you. If you're a Christian conservative gun owner and a heterosexual, they hate you just as bad as the Klan hates black folk. And no country can survive this level of hate politics and division because that means what Quigley quoted as saying. By the way, that wasn't Quigley quote saying that it should be that way. He's saying that that's the way the government looks so they can achieve the continuity of government no matter which rascals are elected to office.
Speaking of,
become well enough aware of who these people are and how to dismantle this, then you can expect to lose the Constitution completely, entirely.
Speaking of elections, Vladimir Putin, 6 more years. The guy wants to stay there forever, along with the Chinese president.
Well, you know, I don't really care. It's not my country. I don't think there's a lot of countries that are run today. I don't even like the way England is run. For heaven's sakes, they have to ask the Queen to make physical decisions about money policy. I'm sorry. Saudi Arabia? I'm sorry. I can't see these people in their white robes and their medieval policies in their own country, and yet we're saying over here that we need their oil? Well, we know we don't need their oil. We could be independent of oil anytime we want to.
Haven't we become one of the biggest producers of oil again?
It would be easy for America to be completely independent. But if you own the oil, if you're one of the corporate moguls at the banking system level, the monopoly banks like J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs, you own stocks and shares in Exxon Mobil, you own oil. So they're going to go to Saudi Arabia and use their oil. The oil that really belongs to them personally, that they actually have a holding, they're going to sit on it until Saudi Arabia runs dry. They're doing it for their own self-interest, but the American people have no way to get their mind around that kind of corporatism because they don't understand business. Even businessmen don't understand business.
Craig, with all these things that are going on, the future doesn't look too bright. It's kind of depressing.
Well, it is unless you're... as a Nietzschean, I'm an existentialist, so I take issue with government and the people that would allow a government to infringe on other people's rights because you don't like that certain group. And the left is as guilty as the right ever was, both sides. sides are guilty. But as an existentialist, I don't really care. I'll deal with the way the world goes no matter what. So, you know, I have no personal stake in trying to save my country. I'm just trying to help my clients first and foremost. They get most of my time, and I produce 500 pages sometimes a week for them to digest over 1 week period of time. But that's because they pay me to help them. But as far as the American people go, I still get, to this day, somebody's heard me maybe once or twice on a show, they'll call in and they'll want me to shut up. And how they do that is they say, we need solutions. Let's talk about solutions. That's not what they want. They want me to shut up and not talk about the problems anymore.
Well, we'll find out when we take calls. What do you think of the investigation into the Russian collusion?
There's nothing there. There's nothing there. Everybody who was anybody, especially moneyed people, have been doing business with the Russians. When you do business with Russians, you're doing business with former KGB,
right,
former Soviet officials, oil oligarchs. No differently than doing business here in America. We have an oligarchy. Do we think Russia's oligarchy is different from ours? No. We just pretend now, today, tonight, that the Russian oligarchy is bad, while we still pretend there is no American oligarchy that is far worse. The fact is none of these things are being honestly dealt with for the interest of the American people. There is no interest about what happens here in America, or we would be benefiting. If it was an American empire, like Noam Chomsky calls it, the progressive left, an American empire, you and I would be benefiting. We wouldn't be living with inflation. We wouldn't have 100 people permanently unemployed. We wouldn't be number one in the Western world for illiteracy, pornography, and obesity.
I want to get your thoughts on this. I've been opposed to driverless cars. And yesterday it was reported that an Uber car killed a woman in Arizona. What do you think?
You know what? A lot of technology. I did a paper 25 years ago for a client that was a Wall Street guy, but he invested not just his money, but large corporations like Bechtel. He handled the Bechtel account personally. And I did a paper on technology because that's where he directed a lot of the investments. And as I went through my research and analysis and talked to people in the industry, and I finally got around to producing the paper, a lot of technology is being put forward and pushed forward simply because they can. Somebody's going to get rich pushing driverless cars until the driverless cars kill enough kids and moms.
And they will.
The street, then they'll wake up. And, of course, it'll be too late. The guys that founded it will be living in the Riviera, debt-free, and billionaires.
And what about these driverless trucks? I mean, we're going to displace our truck drivers? I mean, my God,
that's
lunacy.
Exactly what they've been planning. This isn't. How many times have you heard me say this? FDR said it first. Nothing happens in government by accident. If it happens, it's planned. NAFTA's plan always had that in a little footnote. Under the GATT Accords, it was always buried deep so American congressmen and their families would never find out that the real goal of NAFTA and the GATT Accords was to create an environment where there'll be no workers. None. They want robotics and driverless trucks. They want a freeway system. They want tunnels, railway, without human beings. Because these are the richest people on Earth, and for the last 100 years, most foreign direct investment and domestic direct investment has gone to technology.
Well, it's got to change, Craig, because it's a disaster. I get calls from truck drivers every night, as you know, and my gosh, I mean, this is their livelihood.
Yep. Well, you know what? One day you'll wake up and there will be, in fact, there already is a store just opened, an Amazon store. And little robots walk up and down the aisles and beep at you and say, hi, how are you? Have a nice day. You go in and you buy your groceries, you buy everything. You have to check out yourself. Everything's automated. There's not a human being anywhere to be found.
What's going to happen to all these people who have work and jobs?
Well, I just said at the beginning of this show, and I've said it now for years, there's 100 million Americans that will never work again. You want to know what the government would like to do to solve that problem?
Now, how do you solve that problem?
They actually have an idea that's been percolating in the Balkan countries and Sweden and Switzerland, where every single human being in America, 18 years and older, will receive a check from the government, whether they work or not.
For how much?
Well, that's a big stickler. A lot of people say, I wouldn't go more than 500, but there are some theorists that think if it was 1500, we would probably create a utopia of, you know, Nobel Peace Prize winners. Everybody would read philosophy and become sculptors and painters. And no, they would just buy better and more drugs, and they would buy bigger screen TVs, and they wouldn't just be 300 pounds overweight. They'll be 500 pounds overweight.
You don't have a very bright picture of our future, Mr. Hewlett.
Well, it's because I have to look at all the facts of the matter. And, you know, I just got picked up a book by Peter Singer. He's a philosopher. He's hailed. He's Australian, but he's hailed as one of the Western world's greatest philosophers. He did a study on reading all the polls that were put out by different organizations. Isn't the world becoming more equal? Isn't equality more important now than it used to be? And he goes through all the studies. This study here said 40% of the people in this category, they thought we were becoming a world of more equality, not less equality. He goes through all of it. But then he closes his argument by saying this. This may mean that the surveys I have quoted indicate not widespread equality, but widespread hypocrisy.
We're going to come back with you, Craig, in just a moment. We'll talk more. We're going to take your phone calls. Craig's book is called The Hydra of Carnage. You can still get it. You have to be very careful how you find it because it's still available. His website is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And I know what you're hearing may not make you happy, but it is the truth. He just lays it right out there, and he doesn't hold back. So join us in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take your phone calls here. And those of you who are lucky enough to get in, go for it right now.